Time now is 20 minutes until 5, and we have two items today that we will take up with Senator Stevens, Huggins, Stedman, and Wilkowski. We have a quorum. Senator Green may join us here a little bit later, but anyway, we have two items. The confirmation hearings continuation on the nominee for Commissioner of Fish and Game, Mr. Denby Lloyd, and the second one is SB 103, which is a land transfer to Alaska Railroad involving a Klutna. So with that, the first item we'll take up is Mr. Denby Lloyd. And Denby, would you come forward and put yourself on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Denby Lloyd, Commissioner Designate for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Very good. I guess, first of all, we'd like to give you the opportunity to make any initial comments or statement that you might have since we last talked to you, and then we'll give members a chance if they have any final questions. We're not going to take public testimony. We'll talk about some things to be on the record that we have received from different organizations or individuals. So, but this time, give you a chance. We will also give you a chance at the end in summation. So please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I know that there's been some concern about my background being primarily from the commercial fisheries management side, and I acknowledge that I had to come from someplace, and that's where my expertise was developed. On the other hand, the job of commissioner within the department is to oversee not just commercial fisheries, of course, but sport fishing management, game management, subsistence, and various policy issues that involve all of those aspects of the management and utilization of fish and wildlife in the state. I look forward to that challenge. I look forward to treating constituents in a fair and equitable manner and bringing science and prudent policy analysis to the performance of that job. So to the extent that people have concerns about my background favoring one group over another, I would like to assure you to the best of my ability that there will not be any favoritism in the commissioner's office. And just one aside, even within my experience within commercial fisheries, there's certainly no lack of internecine issues within commercial fish politics, and I hope that I've made it clear in my past behavior of being fair even amongst those groups. So I will bring that forward as well. Thank you.
Okay. Members have questions for, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We learned recently about at least what the court has declared to be a bounty that was put on wolves in certain areas, and was that your decision to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wilkowski, yes, that was my decision to create an incentive for increased participation in the wolf control effort, at the same time to collect usable scientific samples. We were advised at the time that there was a distinction between a bounty and this type of incentive, and in fact we have performed this type of sample gathering in the recent past, so we didn't anticipate the legal difficulties, but I imagine people seldom anticipate legal difficulties, and here we are.
Did you consult with your attorneys before you went ahead and made that decision?
Not in this particular case. Kevin Saxby was on leave. We consulted within the department. And as I said, we had recent experience in that regard in a similar fashion and didn't anticipate the problem that we're in.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have several questions here, if you don't mind. There was also discussion, I think I read a quote somewhere, that you had stated your intent to pursue the killing of wolves by helicopter. Was that a statement that you made?
We are still considering that exercise. We have come to no decision at this point.
Is that something that you intend to pursue at this time?
I intend to still consider it, but no, I've not made a decision to pursue it.
What factors will come into play in order for you to make that decision, whether or not to take that action?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wilkowski, the pragmatic factors will be the snow conditions, the likelihood of success, the number of animals left in a particular unit between where we're at now and our objective, logistic considerations, and also policy considerations within the governor's office.
when you say policy considerations within the governor's office, can you explain that?
Briefly, I think the governor and past governors have had to weigh the efficacy of these types of efforts versus the potential resistance to these efforts by other constituent groups. There's a constituent group that favors this type of exercise for predator control, and there are constituent groups that don't. And given that the governor is the chief executive, I would follow her lead based on our recommendations on employing this type of exercise.
Do you think it's appropriate to be making these type of wildlife decisions based on politics instead of science?
There are always public policy aspects to the decisions we make. What we do in the department generally is to prepare the scientific information and forward those policy directions to the policymakers. Oftentimes we're going to the Board of Game, to the Board of Fisheries, and oftentimes also to the Office of the Governor.
And then recently the Board of Game made a decision to allow the trapping of wolverines in Anchorage. And what is your position on that?
I don't have a personal position on that. I'm not really familiar with that issue. I know that there are competing views within the staff of the department on whether or not that should be allowed. And again, that's, I think, part of the role of the Board of Game, to make those choices when there's not a clear technical guidance from the department.
When you make these decisions, when you make decisions based on predator control, for instance, we always have this debate over whether it's politics or science. What will be your approach?
Mr. Chair, Senator Witlakowski, my approach is to provide as good a scientific basis for any of the exercises that we engage in. However, it still does remain a public policy choice to either have populations, say, of ungulates that are at low levels with high predator populations, or to shift that balance in order to achieve a goal. And scientifically, we can document that accomplishing predator control in some areas can result in an increase of ungulate populations that then can be harvested by human beings for consumption or for sport. That's the biological basis for these decisions. There isn't a scientific basis to make the decision of whether or not to do it. That does come back into the public policy arena.
At one time, I believe you said you had a desire to see the number of wolves in certain areas decreased down to approximately 20 or 30% of what they are now. And I'd, if I'm misstating what you had said, please correct me. Do you still, if that was your position, or was that position, if not, what is your position?
Mr. Chair, Senator, as I understand the science and as I've been advised by personnel in the Wildlife Conservation Division, in order to be effective at wolf control, you need to reduce the population by about 80%, so that would leave 20% in those areas. These are canid populations. They have large litters. They reproduce at a very rapid rate, and so to be effective to reduce the predation by these populations, the goal generally is to reduce them by 70 to 80%.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, Mr. Roy, could you give us a little bit of background on the issue of predator control? And and obviously there are people out there that wish to have predator control, and those who don't. We've heard some of the comments on both sides, but we need to hear the other side a little bit more about why. Who are the advocates for predator control, and what's the overall arching reason to have predator control? And you might comment also on, I don't think this is your original idea to go into the predator control business, and maybe give us a little idea of how that has evolved through the years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stevens, in fact, predator control in this instance is a relatively new issue to me. But we are basically engaged now in a program that focuses on five areas of the state, and perhaps there'll be requests for an additional two or three. Currently, it involves less than 10% of the land mass in Alaska, and there's certainly many areas wherein such exercises would not be allowed, whether they're federally controlled wilderness or national parks and things like that. To the extent that public policy choices are made to increase moose and caribou populations by virtue of predator control on some portions of state lands and in Alaska, I think that that's a reasonable choice by the public. These choices have been made through the legislature, through the intensive management law, through the Board of Game, through various approaches to them and their deliberations. And I don't know that I can characterize a constituency, but certainly there are many sport and subsistence users who are looking for increased moose and caribou populations in several areas of the state that are looking for the department and the state to help in that regard by reducing predation by predators so that that predation basically can be substituted by humans for human use and consumption.
And so, Mr. Chairman, I believe you're trying to, and the department has for years, trying to balance many demands on the department for various needs, and it's occurred for some time, and often politics does enter into it. It's not just purely a matter of science. I just would like to say I've known Mr. Lloyd for gosh knows how many years, but a long time as he's been in Kodiak and head of the department there and the head of Comfish, and has a great deal of respect from my standpoint as well as many of my constituents. But I just want to get on the record that you just didn't come off the crab boat or fall off the turnip truck. What has been your experience working with, because your job now will be a great deal of personnel management and managing a very large number of people. What's your theories of working with groups of people like that and managing them?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Stevens, I have had experience at administering divisions within the department. Well, one division twice, actually. I was director of commercial fisheries at two different times. Also regional supervisor, as you mentioned, out in the Kodiak office. That's my administrative background. I've also had scientific research and management background as well. And I don't know that I have a theory of personnel management, but I have approached it in basically three different ways. When I was a project leader, of course, I was looking out for the safety and the efficacy of the assignment that we were involved in, and I would have my staff perform their duties in an effective way, but also looking out for safety. At a mid-management level, I was looking to buffer, promote, and defend the staff and their ability to accomplish their tasks, making sure that they were provided with good personnel services and budgetary services as well. At a more senior level, there is a broader perspective, I suppose, in dealing with public policy aspects and how public policy affects the direction given to staff and, of course, how staff perform those jobs in a scientific manner from an internal perspective, but also in a responsive manner to the public policy demands on them. And my perspective has changed, certainly, as my responsibilities have changed. But we have, I think, an enviable constitution that leads or guides our resource management program in the department, and we have an enviable system of regulatory development through the boards of fisheries and game. And I look forward to working with the legislature, with the administration, and with the boards to figure out what the appropriate public policy direction will be for the department, and then to carry that out in a scientifically defensible manner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were very fortunate today at lunch. We got to have red crab. Lunch, that was pretty good. And I know dealing with this, you know, it's a kind of a board of fish issue, but I thought I'd just bring it up, and that's the way the red crab commercial and the personal use is handled, particularly on the northern end of Southeast and around Juneau, where there's not enough, if there's not a large enough biomass, the commercial fishery shut down, but then 20% of that allocation, as my understanding, is shifted back into the personal use. And it just doesn't seem to be a fair allocation if there's not enough biomass for the commercial fishery. That I just can't fathom how you can have then 20% of that quota that supposedly, or 20% of that biomass that's depressed, moved into the personal use fishery. And I voiced my concern to at least one of the members of the board. I thought I'd take this opportunity to mention it to you, especially after lunch today. And if you have any comments on it, that's fine. And if you don't, you can touch base with my office later.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stedman, I don't know that I have a very pertinent comment other than the board makes those public policy choices, hopefully on defensible scientific information that we provide them. I'm not completely familiar with the numbers of the issue you're talking about, but I'd be happy to look into it.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, yep. Just the whole issue of how the Red Crab survey, you know, has been done in Southeast Historical Land has brought some indigestion forward. In the last couple of years, there's been some modification at the department's level dealing with their algorithm. You know, when you have time, I'd like to have a little update in my office on that particular issue. I'm going to support, you know, your name going forward. I don't have any indigestion with you filling the department as the commissioner, the head of the department. Just thought I'd take this opportunity to bring up just a couple little issues.
Thank you.
Oh, you're a Nazi.
Thank you, sir. And you're right. We have done a fairly thorough review of our Red King Crab survey methodology here, and we included outside reviewers to help us with that, responding to a number of concerns from the fleet. I can't say that we've accommodated all the concerns, but we've made a fair amount of movement.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. I too have just two minor issues. One is regarding the decision or the recommendation on the federal level to reduce the halibut quota or the halibut catch for sport fisher for charter boats down to one halibut per day. What is your position on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Wilkowski, we very quickly came out with a letter back to the National Marine Fisheries Service to Dr. Jim Balsiger, who was also on the Halibut Commission that made that decision, and asked them to reconsider it because we felt that a one fish bag limit was unnecessarily onerous to the sport fish charter industry and that the harvest reduction objectives that they were looking for could be accommodated in other ways. Since that time, I think partially as a result of our letter, but certainly as a result of other constituent influence, the Federal Secretary of State and Secretary of Commerce have rescinded that action, and they are making they are going through final rulemaking now to institute a what they're calling a one-plus bag limit for Southeast Alaska. As I understand it, that's likely to look like one fish of any size plus one fish less than 32 inches. And in South Central Alaska, by virtue of an action that we took to limit skipper and crew harvest, the federal government decided that they didn't need to impose any reduction in the bag limit from two fish per day. So we believe we made some headway with the federal system, and we're hoping to bring it back to the North Pacific Council rather than to the Halibut Commission.
And then on... I think an issue, should you get confirmed, which will arise in the next few years, I would imagine, is the issue of the potential of pebble mine and the ramifications that that will have on the fishing game in that area. And I'm just curious to hear your perspective on the issue, how active a role you intend to take. There are those who claim that it will have a tremendous impact on the wildlife and the fishery out there. So I'd be curious to hear how you intend to deal with that situation.
Oh, thank you. Actually, it's a little tough to do that without a sense of what their plans really are. Presuming that it would be a major mining effort, there are likely to be impacts unless there is good project review and potential mitigation. I'm following the governor's lead in this respect, in that so far as we can provide the opportunity to have that mine development, great, but the expectation is that it will be developed in such a way that there will be no net impact on fisheries out there. And our department will be directly involved in that. We've already modified the memorandum of understanding between the Department of Natural Resources and Fish and Game so that Fish and Game is directly involved with that program review with the Department of Natural Resources. And we will be looking to see that no net impact to fisheries occurs.
Thank you. And just if I could just go back to the predator control issue. I know Wolves are one of the predators, but there are also studies that show that there's significant predation from grizzly bears and also other wildlife, including golden eagles. And do you intend to expand the program to include those other types of wildlife, other types of predators?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's very possible. Not only grizzly bears, but black bears in some instances are large predators on moose and caribou. And we will be working with the Board of Game to determine in what areas prudent control measures ought to be applied to bears as well.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Many important jobs of the Commissioner of Fish and Game, but one of them that often seems to be in the headlines is sitting on the board of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. Can you give us an idea of how you would approach that, what your goals might be, in any direction or particular input you would have to the council?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Stevens, actually, as Commissioner of Fish and Game, I have a voting seat on the council, one of 11 voting seats. Six of those seats are basically Alaskan appointees, so we have a majority on the council. If that majority is utilized in a reasonable fashion, the interest of Alaska ought to be well represented on the council. What I will be looking out for most specifically is the opportunity to benefit coastal communities rather than any individual harvester or processing group. Beyond that, you know, it gets down to very specific issues and details, and I don't know how far you want to go, but my major guidance to myself and the governor's expectation of me is that we look for opportunities to benefit communities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look forward to Mr. Lloyd being an important part of that commission.
Yeah, let me just point out a couple, three things that we're looking at that maybe the audience, but we have a list of people that's one page in some organizations that say Mr. Lloyd. There's another page that's not quite as full, say they oppose him. It's some interesting names on that list, and we have another stack primarily, I think, from Fairbanks, who both some oppose, some support. But with that, let me just go to something real quick here. And what I'm going to do is take the liberty as the chairman to talk to you based on how I see this story unfolding from based on we've had hearings. You've been heard. There were people called in. Some of them were pretty nice. Some of them were pretty tough. I think that was fair to say. And what I'd like to do is sort of characterize those people that are concerned, because you know about the others. And in all fairness to you, there's some significant outdoor organizations that are in support of you. But internally, they've got a little debate, but that's their business, not mine. I think philosophically, myself as the chairman, say if the governor wants you to be her commissioner, then I will support that within reason. And with some division of mindset on that today. But I will say this. I remind you that you're the commissioner of fish and game. All right. When it comes to fishing, it's sports fishing and commercial. That's important. And in my estimation, the operative term decision has some bearing on why we're having this conversation today, because once upon a time when you, one of the first decisions that I knew of that you made was hiring one of your immediate subordinates. And some people characterize that, whether it's accurate or not, that they were working off a list. Some of these that quite frankly endorsed you, some of the organizations said they thought they were going to have some input. And I will use the term that you used. You hired the person before the campaign started, so you wouldn't be campaigned. And I think in all fairness to the people that you thought would quote campaign, what you characterize as a campaign is their voice in their government. So I think it's important you realize that, and I hope that you take the business of allowing the people, because you work for the people, I work for the people, and this fish and game stuff that's out there and managed for abundance, sustained yield, belongs to the people of the state of Alaska, and I think we cannot forget about it. That's important. And you have an awesome task in that respect. I will go one step further and say that probably sitting at this table, there's nobody feels any stronger about supporting predator control than I do. But I got to tell you, when I saw the the bounty piece of it and helicopters, those are two lightning rod issues that in the long term, in the debate of predator control, I think we lose on, not win on. So that was a concern. And you said you sort of, I think you said you unilaterally made that decision, didn't consult with your lawyers, wherever the case may be. I would ask you to broaden your perspective and be a little more collaborative in decision making, because we all, that predator control program belongs to the state of Alaska, and we suffer the consequences if we don't have that in place. Now, the issue of escapement, I read about it today, and the potentially more fishing in the Cook Inlet, and I live in the upper end of that, and on behalf of my constituents and some others that up in that neck of the woods, remember, the fish that escape do just that. That's why we use the term escape. They run a gauntlet, and we want some of those to make it in upper Cook Inlet. So my friends and neighbors and tourists who I think pump the biggest number of dollars into that escaped fish can enjoy that, and we can enjoy the trickle-down economics of it. In addition, some of those same people that are my neighbors, some live in Anchorage, used to hunt moose in 16B. It's closed. It's one of the larger game units in the state that's close by a metropolitan area. And, you know, we're talking about polar bears being protected, and we might have to have a move to protect the moose in 16B because their numbers are in that dire strait. So that's sort of, in my estimation, a barometer that I would ask you to look at about success of bringing back an animal group that some of us used to enjoy hunting that we can't go over there and hunt any longer. Now, there's two things that I think that you should bear in mind when you go forward. I would encourage you to do this. One's trust, one's confidence. And the way you get that is you go out and engage these groups and individuals. That for one, if neither where they support you or they don't support you, they are reliant upon trust and confidence in what you do and the results of that. And I would encourage you to go out and engage those groups, because it will be my intent to move your name forward today, given the committee supporting that, with a little bit of hesitation. But as I said, the governor said she wanted you as a commissioner, and I will support that. And I'm a member of some of these organizations that supported you, and I've talked to a number of people. You have a great responsibility. It's a responsibility that people will be paying attention to. And you can turn this whole trust and confidence argument around on those that oppose you, but only you can do that. So with that, do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move we forward the nomination of Mr. Denby Lloyd as Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game to a joint session for consideration.
Okay. Is there objection? Okay, hearing none, the name will be moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll take about a 3 minute at ease. Which is an act authorizing transfer of land from the Alaska Railroad Corporation to Aklutna, Inc., and providing for an effective date. We anticipate to hear online from Phyllis Johnson, who is the legal advisor to Alaska Railroad Corporation. Representing Aklutna, Inc. will be Curtis McQueen, Corporate Affairs, Jim Arneson, Corporate Land and Regulatory Manager, Bill Price, potential chief executive officer, and representing the native village of Aklutna will be Daniel Alex, the tribal administrator. And most of those are online now. In addition, we have Bonnie Wolstad in Fairbanks that will be testifying. But first, we have Mr. Gamble with us. Could you give us an overview of what we have and the proposition before us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Gamble. I'm the President and CEO of Alaska Railroad Corporation, and I'm here to speak on behalf of support for Senate Bill 103, which, by way of summary, is in accordance with the Railroad Transfer Act, seeking permission from the legislature to transfer about 48 acres of railroad property over to the Aklutna Corporation, Aklutna Inc., with the blessing of Aklutna Village. The purpose of this transfer is to end a long-standing gridlock that we've had over this particular piece of property. It started out as a quarry and was quarried for a number of years until such time as we became aware that this particular quarry was also a significant cultural icon in the history and the culture of the Clutnas. When I became aware of this and realized that as we were gridlocked in terms of use of any of the product from this quarry or any future mining possibilities being very remote, even the federal government had gotten involved and recognized the cultural issue here and advised us that we were prohibited from using any of the product from this quarry on federally funded projects. We could not get a conditional use permit from the city of Anchorage, who actually has city limit and so therefore oversight of the permitting. We were literally at gridlock, and a closer examination of the purposes for this gridlock and what the real cultural issues were convinced me that we had taken for a number of years probably the wrong approach, and that was to try to legally win a battle where there's winners and losers. This was a cultural issue, and I think rightfully so, it deserved a more culturally oriented solution. In addition, Clutna Inc. And Siri, to the extent that Siri has rights under the surface of lands all through this particular area, in the intervening area between the valley and Anchorage, we had a lot of mutual interests that we wanted to further over time in that area. These were simply not going to develop as long as this single issue really poisoned the relationship and therefore any business trust that there might be in future relationships on a business basis. So for all those reasons, we think the right thing to do is to end this issue, revert the land back over to Clutna Inc., clean the property up, which is in the agreement that we've signed in a memorandum of agreement between the three of us, the village, Clutna Inc., and the railroad, back out of there as soon as possible, roll the track up, and completely revert the land over to whatever uses they would so deem for the future. That in turn, we feel, and all of us have agreed around the table, opens up a gateway to a number of other very interesting possibilities that could be profitable for Clutna Inc., for the railroad, and for all parties interested further down the road. And so for that reason, we're here to seek permission from the legislature to go ahead and as I said, in accordance with the Transfer Act, just simply grant us the approval for the transfer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, questions for Mr. Gamble. Senator Wilikowski.
What is the status of the land to the railroad right now? Are you a licensee, a fee simple ownership? What is the status?
It's fee simple ownership at the current time.
And you will be, if I could have a line of questioning, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, you will be giving this, transferring this property in exchange for what?
The exchange is not a value for value exchange. We're transferring the property just simply because we feel that it's rightfully theirs, and we're not going to use it. We're not going to mine the quarry anymore as we had over a number of years. In the sense that there's an exchange, they have agreed that any rock that is currently laying on the ground that was shot in the past, it's been there for several years, any rock of whatever size that would be part of a cleanup that we would go in and do and bring the materials out in order to leave the land clean, we could have. In addition, if there was on the desire of Clutna Village or in Clutna Inc. to try to landscape the face of what has already been shot, quarried over the years, and to try to clean that up and make it look a little more presentable, we're certainly amenable to going in and with certain restrictions, doing that cleanup, and again picking up whatever comes off the face as we clean that up and taking that out too before we roll the track up.
I'm a little confused. You said the land was the railroad's in fee simple, but then you said the land is rightfully theirs.
Well, that's part of the cultural determination that myself and the staff on the railroad made when looking into the history of how the land became the railroad's. That was not things were done then at in a way that we probably would not accept today, and I think the objection raised by Clutna Village in the late 90s highlighted this issue to the point where there was recognition of their interests in this particular case. It was not until several years later that the railroad in this measure right here recognized their legitimate interests. The history is quite interesting, and it goes all the way back to World War II. But in essence, after a Klutna village offered to the U.S. Army, who ran the railroad in those days, the rock out of that quarry as part of the war effort in about the 1944 time period, after the war ended and the native school, which owned the property, including the quarry, closed and moved, and they started to surplus that land, the railroad asked for the quarry. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs, not the village, gave the railroad the quarry. And the village felt like they had been sold out at that point. And that was the story that I heard over and over again when I went to the village and listened to their history. In Nala, if you read the language of the North Anchorage Land Agreement, we were given the right in Nala to mine that quarry down to the flat ground. The very name of Klutna talks about the geographical features that we were mining away. So it was a significant cultural issue, and as I said, one recognized by even the federal government. We were gridlocked. We were never going to move any product or never mine in there again, in my opinion. But more importantly, I think it's the right thing to do to get this issue back.
Has there been an appraisal of this property? It's 48.17 acres.
If there has, I don't have access to that appraisal.
Do we have any idea what this property is worth?
You might ask Klutna Inc. I think they're available to answer a question like that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Okie doke. Other questions for Mr. Gamble? I think it would probably be of best interest to go to Klutna, and we will do that. Mr. Curtis McQueen, Klutna Inc. crew, are you there, Curtis? Yeah, could you put yourself on the record, and we'd be proud to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, my name is Curtis McQueen. I handle corporate affairs for Klutna Incorporated. I concur. It was a very concise and summarized journey that General Campbell took us on. It's accurate. I'd like to add a little bit to it, and I'd also like to, once I make my statement, defer to a little bit more of the history to Mr. Jim Arneson and then also Dan Alex. This is a 30-year-plus wound that has been opened with Klutna Inc. and the Native Village of Klutna. We both serve the same clients. We work very close together. We are the for-profit corporation. They are the federally recognized tribe, but Illutnoi, and I may be pronouncing that wrong, means the river that runs between. Those two knobs are what Klutna is to our people. And to have those knobs continue to be mined and down the flat ground goes right to the core of our identity. And it was with the arrival of Mr. Gamble that there was a recognition at the railroad, as he articulately pointed out, that it was a tremendous issue. Also, with some of the other long-term things that us and the railroad would like to work together through with some future land trades and some things that would benefit the railroad and us, this was an issue that we needed to get resolved. Technically and historically, this actually also ties back to ANGSCA. And I, through the chair's permission, I'd like to maybe defer to Mr. Jim Arneson to pick that up and maybe clarify some of the ANGSCA and NALA issues there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McQueen. And Mr. Arneson, would you put yourself on the record, please?
Sure. Through the chair, my name is Jim Arneson, the land manager at Klutna. Yeah, I think one thing that was left out in the testimony so far is the tie-in to ANGSCA and ANILCA. This particular piece of property, the railroad had temporary rights to it, which would self-extinguish when the railroad could no longer use the property. The title, the reversionary interest in the title goes to Klutna, and the railroad only had a temporary use of the property until it was transferred to Klutna. So you know, through ANCSA, ANILCA, and then later on NALA, which was a settlement of all the issues, because the ANILCA didn't deal with every issue that was out there. And I think if you understand that as part of the selection process, this was envisioned to go to CLUTNA, and what we're doing is seeing the culmination of a promise that was made over 30 years ago as a result of ANCSA. And I think it'd be wise to let Mr. Alex speak a little bit to this also, as he's been involved with this process for over 30 years.
Oh, okay, thank you, Mr. Arneson. And we will now go to Daniel Alex from the Native Village of Aklutna.
Okay, my name is Daniel Alex. I'm the tribal administrator for the Native Village of Aklutna. I've been involved in this issue and many other Native issues for many, many, many years. As I see it, in terms of ownership, what Mr. Arneson described was correct, in that there was only a temporary use of it. Entitlement rested with the Aklutna Inc., and it was selected based on law as part of the Settlement Act, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Section 3E entitled the Aklutna Inc. to select federal properties, and it was a piece of property that Aklutna Inc. was entitled to. It is a cultural, historical, site. Its value is cultural to the Native Village of Aklutna and to the natives of Aklutna. As I see it, we've been participating with the railroad and Aklutna Inc. in settling and resolving the dispute. We signed an MOU with the railroad and with Aklutna Inc. One of the bottom lines is that the Alaska Railroad Corporation gets to use the stockpiled material, and if they do a restructuring of some of the landscape, they get to also use that too. Anyway, but we're glad that this is coming to a resolution.
Mr. Alex, the this transaction, are there any people that object to it that you know that are they're in the Native Village of Aklutna or surrounding community members?
Well, the council speaks for the Native Village of Aklutna, and the council is on board with the MOU. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to say that, because my statements are made based on based on the council's approval of the MOU.
Okay, so the council has approved that, and I'm looking at one of the agreements that has been signed, and that's who are these signatures? I see the CEO and Mr. Gamble and yourself for the memorandum dated 1/22/07.
Okay, the MOU date back before I became the tribal administrator, so it was there. I think Gary Keener was deputy executive officer, and I think that he signed one. But the MOU goes back a couple years.
Yeah. Yes. Stand by one. Let us. I see a 1982. Yeah, are you talking about the 1982 version?
The version that I signed has to do with maybe 2007, I think.
Yeah, and I see a 1987 version.
That was done before my involvement with the Native Village of the Aklutna.
with the permission of the chair, this is Curtis McQueen, maybe to clarify, for the last 2.5 years going back to 2005, Eklutna Inc., Native Village of Eklutna, and the railroad have had a memorandum of understanding that has had dates, and as those dates have come we have reaffirmed by signing amendments to continue the memorandum of understanding. You are correct that this historically goes back quite a long way, but as far as Mr. Gamble and his team right now, it goes back 2.5 years to get to this process today.
Okie doke. Yeah, thank you very much. Now, are there other aspects of this this land transfer agreement that we should be aware of?
Through the chair, this is Curtis McQueen again. There are some conditions we've worked out with the railroad regarding blasting some overhangs that potentially might be of danger until the railroad takes those overhangs out. There's particular schedules and times of days and nights that we've requested they be respectful of. However, we all agree that the sooner they can get in and get that stockpile off the ground, the better. And we have requested that this summer season be the season that they do it, understanding that there might be some overlap into next summer season. But if in the next 2 summers the railroad can get that rock off the ground and shore up that face, we would like the transfer to happen by then.
Yeah, very good. And if you would just stand by, and Mr. Gamble, the railroad, I assume, can meet the obligations that are in the agreement that we're talking about, the blasting and cleanup?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, if you would just stand by in case we have additional questions. We're going to go to Fairbanks and talk to Ms. Bonnie Wolstad.
Yes, basically, I'm just here listening. The only comment I've got is I'm glad to see that Alaska Railroad is recognizing that there's issues of ownership and working to solve them.
Oh, thank you very much, Bonnie. And Ms. Phyllis Johnson is on the line. Phyllis, do you have anything to add from a legal perspective?
No, Mr. Chairman, I was only available to answer questions if there are any.
Okay. Members have questions of any of the people that have testified, either Mr. Gamble. Yes, Senator Stedman.
I just have a general comment, Mr. Chairman. I commend the railroad on this redirection of a methodology in dealing with these type of issues to try to get a solution that, you know, the community around the rock pit is, or the quarry is happy with it. Looking around southeast here, during the war, World War II, there were several parcels of beach property taken by the Navy or the military, you know, in the war effort. And there was, due to, I think, a lack of sophistication on a lot of part of some of the local Native folks and misunderstandings. After the war, the ownership did not revert back to the tribal entities or the individuals, went on to other entities. And in several areas, it's a sore spot even to today, and it's handed down from generation to generation. And I think the railroad taking a proactive direction sends a good example out to try to put some of these issues to rest, and particularly when the railroad, you know, when there's other surrounding issues that these older items hinder to move forward. So I'm comfortable with the transaction. I wish there would have been an appraisal. Would have been nice, but I also recognize that there's other issues involved here. And maybe there is a commercial appraisal out there on the exact worth. But one of the items or one issue that kind of sticks out a little bit on the map is there a right-of-way that goes off of the railroad right-of-way into the quarry site? And was it just neglected off of the aerial photo, or is it a non-issue? But it is not referenced on the aerial.
The Senator Stedman, the right-of-way is actually the spur line going into the quarry, and that right-of-way would be part of the cleanup as we bring the material out. and finalize the cleanup of the property, it's our intention to pull the rail up and return that right-of-way strip to its natural property look as much as possible, given the years of its use. And so then the main line, which is just a couple hundred yards down from that spur, will then bypass the entire piece of property.
Sure. Thank you. Sid Wilkowski.
Thank you. A couple questions, probably for Eklutna. Since this is a cultural historic site, is it fair to say that Eklutna Village has no plans to either mine or develop this property?
Senator Wilkowski, to the chair, this is Curtis McQueen. That is correct. We are working to keep that area in its pristine natural state. Eklutna Incorporated has other lands outside of this area that potentially in the future may be mineable rock, but do not have cultural significance and do not have the ties to the Eklutna River that these two knobs have. The intention, the whole reason for the 30-year journey is to leave those knobs intact.
Okay, and then just has the municipality of Anchorage or any of the community councils in the area weighed in either supporting or opposing this plan?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, Curtis McQueen again here. Absolutely, we have had tremendous support from the mayor, Mark Begich. He has kept apprised of this situation. We have many occasions to be meeting with the mayor on other Eklutna issues, and this is a question he always raises. I believe that there was a resolution from the NALA committee that was signed by the mayor that was recently sent down, and as the conditional use application process was going through the city, the assembly and the mayor were very supportive. I believe one of the reasons they approved the conditional use process was because we supported it, because they realized that the end result was that its natural state, and that is documented through the municipality of Anchorage extensively.
Well, but just on that issue of a conditional use, is it my understanding that there is no conditional use permit that has been granted by the Planning and Zoning Department or the Anchorage Assembly?
No, this is Curtis McQueen, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. There has been a conditional use recently approved to do exactly that, which is to remove the remaining rock off the ground. And Mr. Arneson is right next to me if there's anything maybe he needs to add.
I'm sorry, just the remaining rock. There's no conditional use permit that has been approved to do anything other than that. Is that fair to say?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Very good. Other questions or comments? Yes, Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I missed when Mr. Gamble was speaking about the issue. It was a part of the quarry was used by the Army, and then I assume when it was transferred to the Alaska Railroad, the railroad itself. You had mentioned that someone gave the railroad the quarry. What entity was that?
And I would ask the historical expertise of Eklutna Inc. to back me up on this if I say something a little bit wrong here. But as we go back in the history, as I've read the story, the native school closed about that time. The Bureau of Indian Affairs closed the school, and it actually moved. When they closed the school, the land that had been retained for the school grounds then literally went up for grabs. And the railroad, who had been quarrying this piece of property, said, we'd like to have the quarry. In the original document review that we found, there was a letter exchange between the railroad and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs asked a couple of questions back. Those were answered, and very simply, the land was transferred to the railroad at that point in time.
From the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Correct.
Well, that's very interesting. I can see why the village would have thought they were being sold out, as you said, and I think this is the right thing. I think I appreciate the railroad going ahead with this and making the situation right. Thank you.
Yeah, other questions or comments from members? Mr. Campbell, did you have another comment you wanted to make earlier
On the I just wanted to add, for the interest of the committee, that the federal government also removed its objection when it saw the progress that had been made, reviewed the documents that had been signed among us to go forward with a solution to this. They also removed their objection to using the product that we would clean up from this property on federal programs. So that has been resolved as well.
Okay, very good. Very good. So, Mr. Alex, one more time, I'm assuming since you're testifying today that you're as a spokesman for the council are in full support of the land transfer.
Yes, we are.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So with that, do I have a motion?
Yes, I'd like to go ahead and move that we move SB 103, Alaska Railroad land transfer of the Klutna from committee with individual recommendations.
Okay, there is no fiscal note. Do I have any objections? Okay, with that, I'll be moved from committee and we'll adjourn.